Panic Chord by Enterprisingly. Read by Mamutastic. A Roy Ed post canon fic. Ed leaves Roy because he does not know what else to do. There's nothing wrong with their relationship, or Roy himself, and perhaps that is the problem. For Ed is so very used to being in mortal peril, constantly playing a game of catch-as-catch-can with death. The sudden stillness of civilian life and a happy relationship does not settle easily on his shoulders. Roy is attentive and caring, and always willing to bend to suit Ed's whims. And Ed is so tired of feeling like he is living his life waiting for the dam to break, waiting for Roy to grow tired of doting on him, of staring at him like he hung the moon, of loving him like Ed is one of the pillars upon which his whole world sits. Ed knows with certainty that while he could never do better than Roy, Roy can do far better than him. And one day, he will. So he spends all of his spare time wondering when the shine will wear off and Roy will look down to see not the fantasy version of Ed who is worth doing those things for, but the real Ed. The one who has lost the thing that made him extraordinary and these days is covered in more scar tissue than unmarked flesh. The other thing that chafes at him is the fact that he has a home now, a house. A place where he has put down ties and weighed anchor. A place that he returns to over and over. His boots are by the door. His books are on the shelves. His clothing lives in dresser drawers instead of a traveling case. He has never had a home since the day that he and Al burned theirs to the ground, that is, until Roy had opened his up to Ed. But Ed doesn't know what to do with routines or domesticity. He does not know how to live without fighting for the right to draw every breath. He does not know how he will survive when the time comes that he must give this refuge up as well, along with Roy's affection. The fear rises like a tidal wave within him, a cacophony of disquiet and displeasure, a thousand voices all screaming that he cannot get comfortable with this because it cannot last forever. And one day, when the noise in his head grows too loud and he feels the walls of their cheerful house closing in around him, Ed pulls his old traveling case down, packs his things, and leaves. He barely even pauses to say goodbye. When Roy demands, in a voice that breaks and with eyes that shine just a little too much for Ed's comfort, to know why he is leaving, Ed looks away, unable to speak. "Just tell me that you do not love me anymore. Tell me that's why you have to go, and I will let you leave," Roy says, frustration and yearning bleeding into his words. "But you cannot walk away from me in silence, Edward. That is too cruel." Roy's fists, covered as always in his white gloves, are clenched by his side. And though Roy stands, as ever, straight and proud like the military man he is, Ed can see the fine tremors that shake his frame. "I don't fucking love you anymore, okay? It was fun for a while, but I'm bored of this," Ed says, shrugging with nonchalance that he does not feel. It sounds like a lie, even to his own ears. He can't look into Roy's eyes. If he does, the older man will see the truth, call his bluff. Roy will make him stay. But Ed does not let their gazes meet, and Roy doesn't even debate it. He doesn't fight it. He just goes limp, as if he's been shot, and falls like a house of cards. "All right," Roy says, and that is it. He does as promised and lets Ed walk away. When he steps out and slams the door behind him, Ed feels like he's breathing air that is too thin, like he's jumping off a cliff, like he's burning himself alive and on purpose. "It is for the best," he thinks as he walks down the street, footsteps echoing off the cobblestones. Of that he is certain. Of that he must be certain. If he is not, no, he cannot think about it. This year has been great. And isn't it better for everything to end while it's all still a happy memory? What good would it do to wait until everything fell to ruin and they learned to hate each other? As it is, he and Roy will hurt for a bit, but they will heal. But if Ed waits for the day when Roy decides they're through, he knows for a fact that he will not survive. Because something this good can't last. So Ed leaves, and he just goes. He goes now because he's afraid that if he does not, he never will. He spends 2 years in Shing, and one in Kreta, 7 months in Ishval. He manages about 3 weeks in Drachma before the cold chases him south again to Erugo, where he remains, soaking up the sunlight and tinkering with one research project after another, for almost 15 months. He does not set foot in Amestris except aboard trains bound for other places for a very long time. Every month or so, someone will track down his current address with enough accuracy to actually get mail to him, and a package will arrive with missives from Al and Rinri, from Pinako, from Ling, from Risa, and the rest of the military men. And then, after the first year, which holds only silence from his former lover, he begins to get them from Roy, too. Ed is always happy to hear from his friends and family, to learn of his new niece, and then his new nephew, to hear about the success of the efforts being made to rebuild the country and to change it for the better. But Roy's letters, oh, they leave him aching and lost, and so very confused. My dearest Edward, the first one begins. There is no anger, no judgment, none of the rage or hurt that Ed had expected to find within when he finally forced himself to stop shaking and open the letter. Instead, the letter speaks about the day-to-day of Roy's life, the projects that he's getting to around the house, the people at work, and the work itself. It sounds like the conversations that he and Roy used to share over the dinner table or in the sitting room. It is so mundane, as though nothing has changed and Ed is just on a long vacation, and Roy is expecting him to return home any day now. Ed wonders, at first, if perhaps something has happened to Roy, if he has suffered some trauma that caused him to lose his memories. But when he writes to Hawkeye to check, she tells him that it's nothing of the sort and won't say any more. They promoted me to Major General last month, and there was a great deal of pomp and circumstance. You would have hated all of the parties and official receptions. I would have enjoyed seeing you in a suit for once, but it is probably for the best that you were not forced to attend, as I know that you do not hold with formality. He thinks about replying, but he does not know what to say. The letter is tucked away into the bottom of Ed's traveling case and remains unanswered. The letters that follow, despite Ed's lack of a response to the first one, are much in the same vein. Though, as time wears on, Roy's mask, the one that he somehow wears even on paper, slips a little until the day that Ed finds himself sitting in a piazza in Erugo, biting the skin off his knuckle hard to keep from crying. I have missed you greatly in this last year. The house is far too quiet without the sound of your footsteps pacing back and forth while you try to puzzle out the mysteries of the universe, and our bed is both too large and too cold. I know I said that I would let you go, and I meant it. I still mean it. But I cannot help but feel that I was perhaps wrong, that I should have fought harder, that... Well, it's too late for that now. The letter in his hands, despite never saying it outright, speaks of bleeding heartache and loneliness, deep resignation to the fate of a sad bachelor who will remain married to his work because the only thing that could have pulled him free has long since left him behind. Ed feels the pull in his heart, the inexorable tug back to the man who had been a safe harbor for his soul. But he fights it, because a harbor is only safe until the storm comes, and then it too can be blasted clean off the map. Each letter is signed, "Yours always, Roy." Ed keeps every single one and never writes back. Eventually, the letters decrease in frequency until they stop coming altogether. There's a hole in Ed's heart, and it's so much deeper and darker than he could have fathomed, that began tearing the day he walked away from Roy. And nothing he does, nothing he sees, or learns, or experiences, will make it close. The day his mail bundle comes and does not contain a letter from Roy for the fifth time in as many months, the hole rips open into an aching chasm that bleeds and bleeds and bleeds. The fear that he made the greatest mistake in the world by leaving Roy behind grows, gnawing at Ed's heart like a wild dog with a bone. Then, one day he wakes up, feeling old and sad and so very, very cold, despite the heat of the Arugan summer. He gets to his feet and leans on the wash basin. Ed looks at his face in the mirror, thinned and sculpted by age and exhaustion, and a stack of letters in his open suitcase. And all he wants in the whole wide world is to be held by Roy one more time. For all his searching, he has found nothing that could hold his focus half as tightly or his body with a fraction of as much tenderness. He wants it so badly that he no longer cares what the consequences are. Ed left to protect himself, and instead, all he has done is wander aimlessly across the world, aching and longing and wishing for the one thing that he threw away on purpose. Ed books his ticket home that afternoon and spends the next week and a half sitting in a train car, trying not to think about what he will find when the locomotive reaches its destination. He does not call ahead to tell anyone he's coming. When he finally returns to Central, he feels like he has fallen sideways, slipping through the walls of reality into another world where everything is the same, but is also really, really not. Like a compass needle being pulled north, his feet carry him by force of habit, from the train station to the front door of the home that he had laid claim to for just shy of a year. Ed stands outside in the gathering darkness, illuminated by a pool of golden streetlight, looking at what is both familiar and strange. There are lights in the windows. Roy is very likely home right now, separated from Ed by nothing more than a few walls. After all, he was always very protective of his time spent reading and lounging before a fire after a long day at the office, and Ed would be willing to bet that has not changed in his absence. The house is almost exactly as he left it. Roy has had some landscaping done, but little else has changed. Ed wants, more than anything, to let his feet take him the rest of the way, up the front steps to the door, let his hands turn the key that he carries still in his pocket, in the lock, just to see if it still works, to see if Roy truly meant the words that he wrote at the end of each of his letters. But fear sticks his feet to the ground like glue, and he cannot move. What if things are different since the last time that Roy sent a letter? It has been close to 6 months now since the last message, and that is a long enough time for things to have changed. What if Roy has found someone else at long last? What if he is too hurt, too angry with Ed to let him back in? What if he has simply given up? There is a flicker of motion in one of the windows, and Ed starts. He is caught, unable to move, unable to decide what he wants, what he needs, and so he just stands there and lets fate decide for him. The front door of the house flies open, and there is Roy. Roy, who is dressed in his civilian slacks and a white shirt. Roy, who is not wearing shoes. Roy, who is all but sprinting down the front path towards Ed like a man possessed. The traveling case slips free of Ed's fingers and falls to the ground just in time for Roy to draw even with him. Ed has a fraction of a second to look into Roy's dark eyes before he is being engulfed in an embrace that knocks the wind from his chest. Roy wraps Ed in strong arms that pull him close, hold him tightly. Tentatively, he lets his own arms come up to wrap around Roy's back in turn. They stand, locked together in the pool of street light, for a very long time, not saying anything. When finally the contact, so much after nothing for years, becomes too much for Ed, he squirms free and pulls back. At last, he gets a proper look at Roy for the first time since he left. There is gray at his temples now, and there are new lines, that are definitely not from laughing, at the corners of his eyes and between his brows. He looks worn and older in a way that Ed is sort of surprised by, because Roy had always seemed so ageless before. But he is no less handsome than he was on the day that Ed left. "You came back," Roy says, so softly, as though he's afraid that if he speaks too loudly, Ed will bolt. Yeah, Ed says, looking at the ground. "Is this to stay, or are you just passing through?" The question sounds like it hurts Roy to ask, and Ed feels something crumble inside of him. "Do you want me to stay? I thought maybe you might have found someone else when you stopped writing." Ed scuffs his boot against the cobblestones. "Never," Roy says, and there is such force behind the word that Ed actually looks up in surprise. "The only reason that I stopped writing is that when you were silent for so long, I thought that perhaps you wished me to leave you in peace. So I made my own with the notion of a new level of solitude and tried to give you the space I assumed that you desired." "I never knew what to say. You wrote to me like we had never stopped being whatever we were. And I didn't know how to feel about that." Ed studies Roy's face, trying to understand what he is seeing there. He had expected anger, but instead there is nothing but naked longing, tentative, hope, and also the lurking shadow of fear. As though Roy is terrified that this will all end with Ed vanishing again. Then Roy's face shudders, and Ed finds himself looking at Major General Mustang instead of Roy. "Had you ever told me to stop, I would have. But we both know that when you left, you were not exactly honest about why you were going. I could not stop you, but that does not mean that I had to believe you," Mustang says. Anxiety grabs Ed by the heart and squeezes. Roy's face softens a little once more. "Edward, I have waited 1796 days for you to come home, and the only thing I wish to do at this moment is to take your hand and lead you inside, to climb into bed with you and hold you until I am certain that you are real and not a hallucination brought on by nearly 5 years of missing you. But I have loved your ghost for far longer than I was actually allowed to love you. I will not, I cannot, do this again unless you mean to stay." "How can you still want me?" The question tears itself from Ed's lips before he can stop it. "How can you still say you love me after I left you like that? After I never wrote you back?" Roy's eyes drift skyward. "Love is not rational, nor is it kind. I tried to hate you. Really, I made every effort to replace longing with anger." His gaze drops to meet Ed's once more. "But you shine too brightly, Edward. The year we had was the best of my entire sorry life. How could I do anything but love you?" Ed makes a choked, broken sound in the back of his throat and reaches out to grab the front of Roy's shirt. He hauls him forward so that he can kiss Roy. Their lips meet at the wrong angle and their teeth click painfully. They are both out of practice and out of sync with each other. It does not matter. I'm staying, Ed says against Roy's lips, repeating the words over and over until they are swallowed up by Roy's kiss. In the end, Roy does take Ed's hand and leads him inside the house. And when they crash together in a tangle of naked limbs and frantic energy, there is a new edge to the way they handle one another, something that swirls amongst the joy and relief of touching each other once more. It feels like sorrow and little bitterness over the lost years and the silence and the hurt. Their relationship is different now. Ed loves Roy as surely as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And Roy would devote himself to the cause of making Ed happy for the rest of his life at the cost of everything else, if Ed so much as asked. But there are shadows and places where they do not fit so perfectly together now. They catch on each other, and when they fight, it is like the early days, back before they had any idea that they would ever be anything other than Full Metal and The Bastard. And Ed feels a knot in his chest, ease. Because this he can understand. And this feels like pulling on an old coat, warm and comfortable and torn and mended, and perhaps just a little short in the sleeves. Because he has grown and changed. But that is good. That is right. Everything is as it should be. What they had before was too perfect, too pure to last. What he has now with Roy has been broken and mended. It is a love that has proven itself against the odds. It feels right. As Roy's even breathing tickles the fine hairs at the back of his neck, and Ed lays once again in the circle of his arms, where he has always belonged, he knows that he has found what he is looking for. Ed has come home at last, and he will not run away again.
Panic cord, and maybe you were happy I was bored, but maybe I wanted you to change. Maybe I'm the one to blame. Oh, maybe you were just too nice to me, and maybe it took me way too long to leave. Maybe what
You've just finished listening to Panic Chord by Enterprisingly. If you've enjoyed the story, please leave some feedback for the author on AO3. If you enjoyed my recording of this story, please leave me some feedback also on AO3. The song used in this recording is called Panic Chord by Gabrielle Aplin. And now for some reader free talk. I adore the story of Ed adjusting to civilian life, or rather, how he fails at it. And the Getting Back Together fix are some of my favorites, as I've said before, so this was bound to be enjoyable for me. And I will say that it's half a coincidence that I ended up posting this a week after I posted another Getting Back Together podfic. So I say half a coincidence because, like I said, I love this trope, so it's not really a surprise that I recorded several stories that are similar. But I didn't even notice that it would be the same theme 2 weeks in a row until I started setting the tags on AO3. So here we are. I especially liked the bit in the middle when Roy sends letters to Ed. And, like, I don't necessarily like epistolary fics that are only epistolary, but I do like when there's a part that's told through letters or messages of some kind. And then the ending, when they come back together and things are much better because it's no longer perfect, it's real now. And Ed had already done the worst thing Roy could have imagined, which is leaving, and Roy has already exceeded Ed's expectations by staying in love with him, even when Ed, you know, proved that he wasn't perfect, that he just would leave like that. I mean, Ed wasn't testing Roy, and Roy finally understood why Ed did what he did, so to me, it doesn't read unbalanced or abusive in any way, and it just works out. They both learn new things about each other by being separated for so long. As for the recording, I've played only a tiniest bit with sound effects this time, because I didn't want to overdo it. And so it's just a little bit of crinkling of paper rather than like scratchy tones of a pen on paper writing, because, well, mostly because Ed isn't the one writing the letters, he's only reading them. So there wouldn't be any writing noises for this. It's like when I have stories that are told in part through text messages or emails or chat messages or anything like that. I only ever use typing sound effects when it's the character whose point of view we're in is the one typing or writing. Otherwise, I just use notification sounds, and I felt like for the letters would be a nice touch to have a little bit of crinkling just to get the, you know, the sensation of holding paper in your hand. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this story and my recording of it. I'm still sort of trying to figure out Ed's and Roy's voices. So let me know how you think this worked out, if you felt like they were, you know, recognizable, or if the voices worked for the characters. And that's all for today. Thank you for listening. I hope to be speaking to you again some other time. Bye.